Pieces come and go, and I'm forever grateful. Come and tell me long and slow exactly what I wait for. Better times, yeah, better times. Somehow I don't believe it. I built a house up long ago just to up and leave it.
As we record today's episode of On the Wing podcast, Prairie Grouse seasons and forest grouse seasons, so sharpies, prairie chickens, greater prairie chickens, sage grouse, rough grouse, timber doodles, not a grouse, but it's open, dusky grouse, blue grouse, depending on where you are, what you want to call them, maybe even sooties, right? Sooties, all open.
You're a spruce grouse guy.
Spruce grouse, I love spruce grouse. Beautiful, beautiful bird. The fool's hen, some people call it. but with all of those seasons open across the country, that can only mean one thing. What's that, Carp? What's next?
The big event, the main event, pheasant season.
The big hunt.
The big one, pheasant hunting season is right around the corner. So as you predict, I will have gathered into the office, into the quail conference room at Pheasants Forever and Quail Forever, the smaller one. A couple of my colleagues to play a game of pheasant hunting Battleship, which we created only a couple weeks ago with Prairie Grouse, and we'll also do a forecast for the pheasant hunting forecast for the upcoming season. So it's kind of a two-parter, just like the Prairie Grouse primer. We'll do a forecast, and then we'll play a game of Battleship. Joining me for the conversation today, we have three nicknames. We have the National Treasure. You heard him just for a moment. We'll let him introduce himself in a minute. We have the Regional Gem. I don't know if that's going to stick.
I like the local yokel better.
And we have the Bunt Cake, which we'll need a little explanation. Before we go into around the horn of what those nicknames mean, some breaking news. Want to thank Purina Pro Plan, the new presenting sponsor of On the Wing podcast. So On the Wing is fueled by Purina Pro Plan. All right, let's go around the horn. National Treasure, probably the most well-known nickname. Tom Carpenter, and you are?
I'm Carp. I'm the editor of Pheasants Forever Journal, and listeners know me, and it's going to be fun to do Battleship today, and we'll start out with a little pheasant forecast details. Not a lot. Then we'll get right into the pheasant hunting tips. But I've been chasing a lot of sharptails. I call myself I'm a sharptail hunter until I'm a couple weeks rough grouse and woodcock hunter, and then I'm a pheasant hunter. So
yeah, you are freshly returned from the North Dakota prairie. What yep. have you found out there?
Two trips, been good, very good. A little tougher the second time. I don't know if the birds had been bandied about a little bit, but there seemed to be no shortage of birds. I didn't not seeing as many coveys as I thought. A lot of adult birds in the bag, and they're a little more in the birds that I did bag, and they're a little more cagey than those coveys sometimes. But hunting's been good. I think they had a good hatch of prairie grouse up there, and we'll get into more in the pheasant side of things. Grass is looking really good. I mean, I always call sharptail hunting, where sharptail hunters were like Goldilocks. It's like too much grass, not enough grass. Mm-hmm. It's too thin. It's too thick. It's too tall. It's too short. And usually it's like, I need a little more grass. I need a little more grass. And this year it was, I need a little less grass. I need a little less grass, both height and thickness. So I think that's going to bode well when we talk about pheasants.
Did anybody else envision Carp as Goldilocks, like during his hippie days? Did you ever have like hippie shoulder length hair or a mullet at any point?
No, no mullets. I did have long hair. But no mullets.
Wow.
You had long hair?
Oh, yeah.
You were one handsome man.
No, but I don't have any.
I want to see that. We need to make that photo. Tom Carpenter with hippie shoulder-length hair.
I don't think
and it was... And a rooster as the podcast graphic for this episode.
I don't know.
Does that photo exist?
I don't know. I've got lots of old ones. It never was shoulder length. So
what about carp in a tie-dye hunting shirt?
No. Nope.
In a rooster.
Don't have that.
Gosh, you're just crushing my dreams.
A lot of blue jeans and flannel shirts, and that's about it. Nothing fancy.
Yeah, hookah
just
pipe?
Just like me.
hookah pipe.
How have you avoided the heat? I had to cancel my trip to South Dakota to chase prairie grouse because the forecast and temperatures over the weekend are in the lower 90s. Like, I just don't see driving 9 hours to hunt for two. So we're going to the nature's air conditioner, Lake Superior,
yeah,
to hunt rough grouse instead.
It hasn't been bad in North Dakota. I mean, especially this last weekend would have been the, 21st, 22nd, 23rd. It was actually cool, highs of 68 to 70. Mm,
you hit it right.
Yeah, just right. One morning was 41. One day was 15 to 20 mile an hour wind, which I think is perfect. Mm-hmm. Any less wind in your one evening went out, there's no wind, didn't find a bird. Mm-hmm. You know, you need
a little
some wind.
Bit of wind. Yeah.
But the first weekend was warm, got up into low 80s and quit. And then we quit at 11 o'clock in the morning and nap the afternoon and drive around and look at stuff and maybe go out a couple hours in the evening. But no, it hasn't been an issue for me, yeah, as far as being abnormal.
True. Yeah. This weekend, as I projected to go out, I was like, geez, you know, low 90s, upper 80s, high humidity. And there's a cold front coming. By the time this airs, it's probably going to be actually fall. But as we're recording this, it's not going to happen for me. But that's all right. I'm going to head to the woods.
Good call.
The regional gem, the local yokel. We got to come up with a good nickname.
I like
National Treasure, just so folks are up to speed, that nickname came from podcast listeners, at least one, who called you a national treasure. So as in carp. Do you want to lobby for any sort of nickname,
Mr.
Sparks?
I don't think you can give yourself a nickname. I think it has to come from
I gave outside. You regional gem.
Justin Jefferson would disagree with you because he coined himself Jets, right? Like he said, I'm Jets. Now I'm equating you with
him,
Justin.
Beware guys that try to give themselves their own nicknames. I don't know him personally. He's a great guy.
you are kind of stepping into different waters here as the Quail Forever editor, but you do hunt pheasants.
I do love to hunt pheasants. It's not a secret. Yep.
Quail Forever editor from Nebraska, originally living in Minnesota, trying to get back to Nebraska. That's a whole long story.
Yep. Also headed to the Grouse Woods this weekend.
Yeah. And you returned from the prairie as well, but you were chasing something much larger than a sharptail.
Pronghorns.
And with success.
It was a great trip.
Yeah.
It was a great trip.
And the nickname that requires a little bit more explanation, the Bundt Cake. Where's that come from?
Well, when I started as an intern here in 2009.
And we're talking with Jared Wickland, is known as the Bundt Caker.
Howdy, folks. And the first day I learned that our former president and CEO, Howard Vincent, he was in the office and came over to meet me and introduce himself and me to him. And we're just talking a little bit. And he grew up in Duluth and went to Denfeld, which was on the other side of town. So anybody that went to Duluth East or kind of located in Lakeside were the cake eaters. So that's kind of where the Bundt portion of it, I might have given myself that name. I don't know. I'm more of a
cake.
Yeah, more of a portly pheasant hunter myself.
Not that portly.
But I think that's where the Bundt Cake came from, and known as a cake eater. And Howard never called me anything else. It was always Bundt. How's it going? You know, around the office. So he became a good friend over the years, and it's stuck.
So
I've also heard you called WikiLeaks.
Yeah, people call me WikiLeaks too.
Who started that one?
Honestly, I think it was a couple of our friends in South Dakota.
It was Eric Johansson and
Corey Sourwine. Yeah, WikiLeaks.
I think it was Sourwine. It was the first one to ever utter that phrase. So
that's pretty funny.
Yeah, WikiLeaks.
Yeah, no, happy to be here. I too will be. I'll be hunting up north, kind of by my in-laws this week, halfway between Hinckley and Duluth. Gonna go out and give the. I had a little accident the other week playing soccer, and I'm not sure if I tore my ACL or not. And my, I'm not. My left knee is not in good shape right now, so I'm just hopeful to get out, not screw anything else up, and see what happens on an MRI coming up. So
sounds like
there you go.
Sounds like tote trails for you.
Yeah. We'll see what happens, but the dogs are in good shape. I flushed some birds up at our cabin in Northwest Wisconsin last week, and just walking trails without the dogs. So I'm excited to get out. I've got some big deer on camera. I know Ryan does too. So father's coming up in a few weeks. I'm pretty elated to get out and get after it. And I'll crawl the stand if I have to. I really don't care.
All right. So we have on tap for you the national treasure, the regional gem / local yokel in the bun cake to break down the pheasant hunting forecast and to play a game of pheasant hunting battleship. Before we get rolling, as I mentioned, we are thrilled to welcome Purina ProPlan as our presenting sponsor. Purina ProPlan is the national dog food sponsor, longtime national dog food sponsor of Pheasants Forever and Quail Forever's Wildlife Habitat Mission, in addition to supporting this podcast. My pups, Esky, Gitchy, and Winter, all eat Purina ProPlan, not just because of Purina's support for our conservation mission, but because Purina has a whole team of the world's best scientists and nutritionists behind their dog food. In fact, Purina ProPlan Sport, the bag featuring purple text and a German short hair on the bag, was created to fuel hardworking dogs like yours and like mine. For increased endurance, joint support, and muscle tone, it all starts with Purina ProPlan Sport. Learn more at ProPlanSport.com. Purina ProPlan, nutrition that performs. All right, so the first part of today's conversation, we're going to break down the pheasant hunting forecast sponsored by Sportsman's Guide and can be found on the homepage of the Pheasants Forever website. Right now, if you're listening to this episode a little later in the year, you can find the state-by-state pheasant hunting forecast under the hunting tab at pheasantsforever.org. Carp, you're going to get us rolling. You serve as the editor of the Pheasants Forever Journal, but you also serve as the editor of the pheasant hunting forecast, which is no small task because I've carried that torch. Jared's carried that torch, and now you are in charge of the forecast.
Yep.
Without a huge deep dive state by state, give us an overview of what the season's going to hold for all those listeners out there who cannot wait to put a couple of Federal Premium Ammunition shotguns into their over-unders and throw on an orange hunting hat.
Well, it's 22 states are in the forecast, and I'd say 14 to 15 are, you know, they're not the main core. We're going to more concentrate on the core states here today, just for time and brevity. But, you know, there was a lot of trepidation as spring became rainy, and that rain continued. I actually, if you read the forecast, I said at least in Minnesota, in the upper Midwest, the rain fronts lined up like choo-choo trains, and they just kept coming, and they kept coming, and there was a little rain and a lot of rain, but it just kept coming, and there was a lot of trepidation for, man, what's going to happen to this hatch? Because the winter was so mild, and a lot of birds went in to the winter in good shape and came out in good shape, but you know, as you'll see from the forecast, and I'm talking here, both Dakotas, Minnesota, Iowa, the surveys came in stronger than anticipated, and the commentary, the research we do with biologists came in stronger than anticipated. So the scientific data is there. Good, decent numbers of birds, more than we would have thought, came through. And also anecdotally, that if there were some problems with the first hatch, a lot of small birds were being seen.
Clarified, not first hatch, but first nesting attempt.
First nesting attempt. That's a good correction. And there's a lot of second
nesting attempt
birds out there, which are usually smaller broods, but they can really make up some of that ground that you thought you lost. And to what can we attribute that? Pheasants are tough. They keep trying, and they come back and they try and have that second hatch. Minnesota's numbers came in pretty strong. The only still above the 10-year average, believe it or not. As we look at a rolling 10-year average, South Dakota. Commentary, and you'll read our report by Andrew Johnson. The old-fashioned term is stringer. He's our correspondent in South Dakota, and he's real good. If you want to learn about South Dakota pheasant hunting, you've got about 2,800 words there, region by region, three-county area by three-county area. And I know Jared's going to get into some of that detail too. North Dakota, I think, is looking really strong. Based on the grass I saw up there and comments I've heard from other sharptail hunters who have seen an appreciable number of birds. Montana the same way. And all these places were dealing with drought last year, and that sort of helped the birds. And then a mild winter, and we were all ready for explosion of birds. And we didn't get the explosion, but we sure as heck didn't get disaster with that rain. Even a place like like Iowa, that really got ham-boned with rain.
There's a carpism.
Northwest Iowa got ham-boned.
and basically all of Iowa, and their numbers are really quite good, quite strong. I think when you get down in Nebraska and Kansas, we're dealing with a little more after effects from the drought. And maybe Ryan can talk a little bit about that too after Jared does. But, I think the core of the pheasant range, the big seven, it's just hunt. There's no bad news. It's not ecstatic news, but there's birds out there. And as Bob said, he gave all the details of how to read that, get into that report. You can click to each state. Some of those reports are massive. If you're interested in looking at them, I suggest you read them closely. And you can find some spots and get your old on X going, and you're going to find birds this fall. That's all I got to say.
Before we go to Jared, let's talk Nebraska just for a moment, because you did write that the forecast for Nebraska sparks. Go ahead and fill in the gaps. Because it is a state that didn't get the torrential rains, but is coming off a drought.
Yeah, so Nebraska, Kansas, Oklahoma, all dealing a lot with drought the last few years. Got more, what we call regular rains this last year. I mean, bird numbers are still down. But hopefully on the rebound as well. I know statewide for Nebraska, the surveys the state do, it was up by 19% compared to last year. So
significant.
Yeah, I think still down for like the 10-year average, but starting to see that recovery. And just from the area that I bounce around in Nebraska quite a bit, like habitat's looking good. So I think people have something to look forward to, and Nebraska should be able to find some birds as well.
All right, so Jared, so we go from Karp and Sparks, who did a little bit more of the scientific state agency. Jared, you talk with as many people on a daily basis as anybody inside our organization, fielding questions from reporters, members, partners. So not scientific, but anecdotal. What are you hearing across the country in terms of bird numbers?
Anecdotally, it looks pretty good as we're talking about here across the board. As Karp said, you go into last year, and I ended my season last year in South Dakota. If you go to type in pheasants forever in Google, hard water and habitat, give you a good sense. It's a film that we did last year at the end of the year. Give you a really good sense of how many adult birds were actually on the landscape in a place like South Dakota where we were. But just overall, the amount of birds people were seeing coming through the season led us to believe like, man, this has the potential to be huge. But like we're talking about, water's sort of goofy. In certain areas of the country, like as you go further south and west,
From the Twin Cities.
From the Twin Cities. Further south and west, like the further you get out into the more arid regions, like western South Dakota, down into Nebraska, even going further down into Quail Range, water is life, right? And water is life for a lot of different prairie species, but down there, it's controlled by water or lack thereof. Like the more water they get in some regions is great. You come take that back to a place like Iowa, Minnesota. You know, you get over into Wisconsin, some of the birds over there and some of these other pheasant states that are, you know, sort of east of the Missouri River. Water has a significant impact. And we're talking this year. I mean, there was loss of life on the human side. There was a lot of wildlife struggling in some of these areas. But at the end of the day, I have talked with a lot of landowners in certain places. So southwest Minnesota, where they just got a, what is it, ham-boned?
Ham-boned. Well, that was northwest Iowa.
Yeah.
Did southwest Minnesota get ham-boned too?
Yes, they did. Yes. Okay. Yeah. It could be in that same range.
Hot-dished.
Yeah.
Hot-dished.
I've got a landowner down there that farms about 2,000 acres. He's got a mile and a half crap enrollment. Mm-hmm. And he's sort of the guy that I bounce off of. His name is Derek D. We went to school together. We were roommates together.
Cake eater too?
Senior year. No, I don't.
This is
no.
Luther, this where he went to
yes,
college.
This is Luther College. No,
are Luther alumni cake eaters?
Yeah, I'd say okay. So. Yeah, the ones that
roll. So yes, to answer your question,
the ones that roll in my camp are. But talking with him, he goes, "Man, you know that it was a lot of rain early on. We weren't seeing much, and then all of a sudden, they're coming out of the woodwork. So a lot of young broods. I know in Minnesota alone." There was a video shared with Ryan and I just this past weekend, and it's a turkey brood, so a little bit different, but it speaks to the same thing that one of our colleagues, Logan, sent us a video of a turkey brood that was going past his deer blind, and these turkeys are not very old. They're like the size of a softball. Mm-hmm. And I think you're going to see a lot of that on the pheasant side too. People are going out. My friend Jared Harbort, who we invited to be on this podcast, he couldn't make it this week as well, has been doing a lot of training down in southwest Minnesota. Same thing, going out and he's finding broods that are like, they're flying, but not very well. And a lot of the birds aren't even colored out yet. So mm-hmm. I think, you know, opening day in Minnesota, you're going to find people flushing birds and they're going to be yelling hen. When those birds get away or get out of the sun, they're going to be able to realize like, oh boy, that was a really, really young rooster.
Yeah, hear that cackle.
You know, moving over into the Dakotas, you know, Carp and I have got some rancher buddies over there. I've got another landowner that's a big donor to Pheasant Fest that I hunt with. He's got a cabin, Tom Palanch, sort of in that Glacial Lakes region all the way. So from, if you take like the I-90 corridor, and even south of there can be good too, but that I-90 corridor all the way across through pheasant country, if you draw a line right there, anywhere north of that, the feedback and anecdotal reports have been just phenomenal. And I wrote the mid-season nesting report earlier in the year for South Dakota. That like 10 to 14 chicks in a brood seemed to be the norm. The largest one I heard of was 18, which is like kind of mind-blowing. So things have been good. I know at my own house and even north, as you get in up into like the rough grouse range and sort of crossover range of Minnesota, with pheasants as we've been getting more rain and water and agriculture's been moving north, so have the pheasants, and they responded to help keep it basically like a no change in abundance statewide, from one year to the other. So hearing a lot of good things across the board. Iowa would be one more. In this past week, I wrote down, I talked to people in Hamilton County, Butler County, Sac County, Poweshiek County, and Dickinson. So basically, you can start from the northwest and go all the way down sort of east of Des Moines. Some of them have started some early harvest, roller chop, and doing that kind of thing. They're seeing birds when they weren't sure what was going to be there, just due to the amount of rainfall they had. So anecdotally, things look great.
It's interesting you mentioned harvest. I wrote down as Jared was talking, one thing I didn't mention that we should is crops. And I think almost across at least the northern half part of the pheasant range, crop harvest is really going to be delayed this year.
Yep.
I can almost guarantee it. I can guarantee it.
Yep.
So don't be a one-and-done hunter. for two reasons. One, the crops are going to be coming out, and that always helps. I mean, there's always birds in the grass, and crops being up is a good excuse not to hunt. But go later, number one. Number two, as we talked about, these broods are young. There's a lot of young ones. There will be birds opening weekend that you can't even tell are roosters that you're going to be like, oh, is it isn't? And you're going to let them go. And they're going to be colored up and available later. So don't be a one-and-done hunter this year.
The other part of that, too, is I've heard a lot about, like, there's just a lot of unplanted fields in certain areas that have come up and, annual weeds and other things, too. So, like, when we talk about the art of the ask and knocking on doors and that type of thing, might be a pretty good year to take a look in Onyx, like read the landscape a little bit while you're driving around. And there's probably going to be some fields out there that you're going to be like, it looks like there's a lot of birds using that. And knocking on doors, especially late season, like after deer season and stuff, might be a way to go.
That could have been one of your pheasant hunting battleship.
Oh, son of a...
That's a good one. Areas that were wet this year and just kept getting rain around where I'm at. I mean, they never got planted, and now, and so they didn't get sprayed. And I mean, that it's amazing how quick that early successional habitat comes up. There's all bugs. Sorts of doors I'm going to knock on this year and see if I can get permission. So,
So two things I want to emphasize there that I've seen and witnessed and heard as well. So I do think that there was some successful first nesting attempts because we had pretty much a non-existent winter rolled into an early spring. So granted, most birds are going off a photo period to initiate their nests. But I think there's definitely a grouping of hens that nested early, pulled off a clutch of chicks before the June rains came. And those birds already look like adults, but come opening day, they're going to just look like young adults. They're going to be fully colored out and ready to go. Then there was the June rains that put a ham bone on little bit later nesting attempts or the secondary nests for others. So there are a lot of very young puffballs is what I refer to them as. The late hatching July and August birds that, to your point, Jared, you're going to have to really look hard to see if there's colors. They're gonna like roosters going through puberty when
they'll be tender to throw in the oven.
Oh yeah, and I've talked to some people too, and we've talked about this on the podcast in the past too. It's years like this that I actually try to hold off on really running my dogs. I hold off as far as I can because those broods are so like your third or fourth nesting attempt. They're so small. That, you know, you start going out and talking about breaking up broods and that type of thing.
What you're referring to is not during hunting season. You're referring to when public lands open in late July.
Yeah.
Even though it's legal.
Yeah.
You would advise people not to go into those public lands and breaking up broods.
This year, I've heard more of that than anything. And even friends going out, and I'm not going to sit here and be critical about it because it's open. You're allowed to go do it. It's all good. The point I'm making is that most of the anecdotal reports that have come back, I mean, you're talking tennis ball size chicks at some point, like even in August, like those. So those late re-nesters, and by that point, you know, you're talking hens that are probably pretty exhausted because they've probably put 40 to 50 eggs down on the ground if they're still trying to get a nest going at that point. So
the second point I wanted to emphasize, which you've touched on early, was turkeys. And you sort of hit on that again, is that turkeys are a much more visual species than pheasants or quail. I mean, we can drive around, see them walking in the metro here. And we all see it on a daily basis, probably. There are turkey broods that look like, you know, they're ready to be adults.
Yeah.
And then there are turkey broods. You're like, holy cow, did that just crack out of the egg yesterday?
Those ones Jared and I saw the other day look like a brood that we would see in Nebraska, like in July.
Yeah.
I mean, they're tiny. Small. Yeah.
Yep.
All right, so there you have it. That's the pheasant forecast portion of this episode. Again, you can go online, pheasantsforever.org, and read all the details. There's a tremendous amount of work and effort. You know, what'd you say, 26 states? 22 states, contributors all across the range with details about whatever state you live in or want to go hunt.
Yep.
So check it out, brought to you by Sportsman's Guide. Speaking of partners, it's time for the premium moment in the field, brought to you by Grain Belt Premium and Premium Light. Jared, it's the pheasant-friendly beer.
Yeah, hey, I feel like we should crack a beer every time we do this.
It is almost 4 o'clock.
Yeah.
The new Pheasants Forever camo cases are available in stores across Minnesota and the 6 surrounding states touching or very close to Minnesota. They hit store shelves September 15th. Today's premium moment comes in via Twitter, or X, if you want to call it X. Ian Stumpf writes in. So Ian says, my first ever bird hunt was a year after I joined the military. An older corporal invited me to come along on a pheasant hunt just after Christmas. There was about 3 inches of snow on the ground, a pair of beautiful spaniels working in perfectly still air, and with the snow slowly floating to the ground. Can you picture that, Carp? That's like your favorite. That might be a pheasant hunting battleship tip in there, too. I don't remember the first bird that I shot that day, but I remember vividly a rooster on the way back to our trucks where the sunlight hit it just right as it flushed into the air, its colors perfectly illuminated. Watching it for a second down the barrel of my gun and then watching it crumple and fall, the dog retrieving it to hand, I instantly understood the genre of game bird art and why it has been such a popular subject for artists for a century. That was the day I fell in love with bird hunting. Ian Stumpf via Twitter. You are today's Grain Belt premium moment in the field winner. You have a Grain Belt premium prize pack headed your way. Thank you very much, Ian, for participating. That was a cool one.
It's a good one. Like it.
All right. Pheasant hunting battleship. The second time it's ever been, well, second time bird hunting battleship's ever been played. The first time pheasant hunting battleship has ever been played. Here's the plan. We're going to go around the horn, each person offering a tip. And just like your favorite fantasy football draft, if you went first, you get dropped down the ladder the next time. So everybody gets a chance, although going first is definitely an advantage.
I'll take it.
Yeah, so Sparks, as the Quail Forever editor, you get the handicap here.
Yeah, I'm in it to win it this time.
All right, so if you bring out a tip that's on somebody else's list, you have sunk that person's tip. You've sunk their battleship, and the winner earns pheasant hunting bragging rights. Still no, I'll tell you what, I'll buy a Grain Belt premium for the winner.
Sweet.
So hopefully we don't have everybody winning. Well, that maybe I'll get a six pack for us.
We can all be winners.
All right. Ryan, you get to go first. Sparks, as the Quail editor, round one, pheasant hunting battleship. What is your first tip on the board?
I tried to come up with some kind of off the wall tips. This one's not that crazy, but there's some ones that you might roll your eyes at later. We'll see. My first one is go solo. So a lot of people think you need a platoon to go out with blockers, and they're like drawn up plays in the dirt, and that works, but if you've never tried it, go by yourself, just you and a dog. You'd be surprised how effective you can be. Even in like a big, monotonous, head-high field of CRP, where you just feel like you're wandering around aimlessly, your dog's not wandering around aimlessly. They're following their nose. Follow your dog, like you always say. And
you're like adding multiple tips in here.
Yeah, you got to watch it.
Come
here.
On.
Am I just supposed to give a sentence?
Just a single tip. You're screwing me here.
Well, I'm just checking you guys off.
We're going to go solo.
Go solo. You want me to stop there?
I think it's a great it's solo. A great tip. I mean, that's my most favoritist way to hunt. There's a carpism too, most favoritist. And
you can
it's
really ham bone those pheasants when you
in a hell hole somewhere.
In a hell hole. I think that's a great tip. I mean, yeah. it's the most funnest way to hunt pheasants, in my opinion.
Totally agree. He just started rolling multiple tips. Yeah.
I
totally agree. I love hunting alone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good one. Don't be afraid to go solo. In fact, it might be best.
I did catch you off without giving other tips. Did you want to still paint the picture?
What else? I'm not trying to cheat here. I just think when you hunt by yourself, you can hunt in a way that you can't hunt in a group, where you're in a big line mm-hmm. and you kind of have a set plan and you have to stick to it. Otherwise, it's not safe and there's people you can take your time, you can move quietly, and you can just enjoy yourself and enjoy the day and kind of let the hunt happen and unfold as it happens and not try to force some strategy on the birds, which yeah. to me, that's a fun way to hunt.
Totally agree. Carp, go ahead. You're up second.
I'm in it to win it too, so I sort of focused on a little less. I mean, we all know, and I'm not going to name them, but there's a lot of great tips that we might not even mention here. But I'm going to go for some more one might call them esoteric ones. And my first one is pack a change of clothes and leave it in your vehicle and have it for the season. And the reason is,
yeah, I want to know the reason.
You might have a weekend.
If a pheasant gets up real quick.
Yeah. I'll say if you've never fallen through marsh ice in a late season hunt, you're not a real pheasant hunter. And I mean, I've had it save the day multiple uh-huh. times. Maybe it's only once a season, but you go through the ice on a 10-degree morning. And you're walking in stovepipes the rest mm-hmm. of the day and your yeah. feet are froze, it's no fun. But mm-hmm. if you can go back to the vehicle, change out, you got pants, socks, long underwear, whatever you need, boots.
Regular underwear.
Whatever you need. And I'll sort of adjust that kit as the season mm-hmm. goes on. And it goes in a duffel bag and that's in my car. It doesn't leave my vehicle.
It's a good tip.
I like that.
It's a good tip. I've been there and that was the end of my hunt. I drove home kicking myself mm-hmm. wet. So...
That's it.
I also have a bag of clothes. In most places, you can also buy some new underwear, too, if you need.
That's well, not a lot some of places I go. Yeah. I think it's just one of those little details that takes you 10 minutes to get ready before opening day. And you can, like I say, it gets late season. You might adjust the socks and gloves.
Particularly your socks.
Yes. And I'm going to give a sub tip here.
But it
relates to this is if it's like, you know, a lot of us will start out whenever start opening bell and you hunt 2-3 hours, the dog is done, you take a break. And I'd like to change my socks before mm-hmm. the second round. Mm-hmm. You, if you've never done it before,
like a new person,
it's like you're a new person. Exactly. It just changes your whole outlook on life. Take those sweaty socks off and get some new ones on.
What kind of material are we talking here? Polypropylene, alpaca,
wool.
What are we talking?
I'm not too fancy. Whatever I've got. You know, usually I like those wool blends, but. They are a little more forgiving than if you're just wearing cotton socks, which a lot of people do. Change them out. Nothing's worse than cotton for getting soaked and staying wet. But change them out.
The reason I was asking, I got a pair of alpaca socks for Christmas last year. Ooh, baby. Those things are, yeah. Wicks water away, wicks moisture away. They dry really quick.
Bison wool? You ever try the bison wool?
Bison wool? Who sells bison wool?
You just Google it. I think there's only like one company that does it. I got a pair for, they make different weights. The light one is my favorite bird hunting sock.
That's good.
Their heaviest one is the warmest sock I've ever had. If you're sitting in a deer stand and not moving.
Do you wear a liner with them, like a polypropylene?
A little liner, and then that bison wool. The sock is like that.
I got a bison farm down the road from me. I might have to stop down there and see if the mother-in-law can.
Jared's gonna be
crochet me a pair of those bad boys.
I've lost complete control of this one.
Jared's gonna be going down there with his headlamp and his shears tonight, and and they'll come out in the morning. Who cut this patch off my bison last night?
Yeah, they like to hang out by the fence, so I can just reach right through there.
You'll be at your loom. That's mine.
All right, packed a change of clothes, particularly socks. Jared, you're up for the third suggestion here.
All right, third suggestion. I think it's very applicable to the 2024 season due to the amount of water we had. I carry them everywhere we go. It doesn't matter if I'm pheasant hunting, elk hunting. Packable waders. They are lightweight. I just checked before we came on this podcast to make sure they are still available, because some of them can be considered vintage, but they actually added straps to go over your shoulders now. For $19.99, you can buy packable waders, extremely light. They go on right over your gear. There's a lot of places. I know we have a lot of land acquisitions in different places throughout pheasant country that have a lot of water on them, and there's going to be a lot of water this year due to the amount of moisture we received during the nesting and broodering season. So whether you need to cross a creek, whether maybe something's half frozen, it's not very deep, but it's half frozen and those roosters are out in some cattails, do yourself a favor, packable waders by Hodgman, $19.99. Tell them Jared sent you. There is no kickback.
Use code WikiLeaks for 20% off.
WikiLeaks. Do they go right over your boots?
Yeah, everything? You can go right over your boots with them. Wow. Yep.
It is a good suggestion. Yeah. I think about a waterfowl production area I have in that I like to hunt in western Minnesota. That there's an island, there is a literal island, and if you bring, whatever, what are the names of the Hodgkins?
Hodgman,
yeah. Muck, Irish, or whatever your favorite, hip boots are. You can cross this little irrigation ditch, and then. Mm-hmm. It's pheasant Valhalla on that. Not necessarily an opener, but once they get hunted, once the birds get hunted and they get forced into that island, it's paradise.
Yep, brand new chest wader version, $19.99. Probably going to be some tax on it.
So. It's like QVC on here.
There you go.
Have you bird hunted in waders before? I've never bird hunted in waders. Okay, I'm an odd man out.
Well, to be clear, I don't hunt in them. I just cross the creek and take them.
Yeah,
you're being able them like to a canoe, get, and then you like stash them on the bank and come back
and grab them. Okay.
I've put them just on late season and just gone out and hunted in them in a place like you're talking. Getting myself to a spot because they're warm as hell. You don't have to worry. You don't get snow on you. I mean, you don't want to do it an all-day trudge. But to get to one of these places like Bob's talking about, and I know a similar place down in Iowa where – and I think I'm going to take Jared up on this, because if I could get out there, it's totally inaccessible unless you cross
these
a ditch.
The difference is these are packable. So they come little tiny pack you can put – if you've got whatever type of vest you got, you can throw them right in there. They're like probably less than a pound. It's good insurance when things are turning a little.
Yeah, most of the technical vests nowadays, whether it's Chief, Final Rise, Hunt Ready,
plenty of
Shields,
room.
Browning, Marsupial, they all have like a backpack component where you can drop it in there.
There you go.
All right, my suggestion of I'm gonna give myself a point here, because you were driving multiple. Ryan, I'm looking at you. You were driving multiple.
Sometimes you can't follow your dog if you're hunting in a big group.
I knew I had to get this out of here right up front, but always follow the dog. Yes, hunt alone, but I think about people that just do the forced march and line up and walk perimeters. Like, no, pheasants don't live that way. Like, just your dog's nose is smarter than your honor student. So get out there. When it comes to pheasant hunting, anyways, get out there and follow the dog.
It's even smarter than a cake eater from Duluth East.
All right. Hard to find. So after round one, Sparks, Carp, Jared, And I'm giving myself the point there. Cause
I'll point out, too, that you made the order and graciously put yourself last for the first round. So
so we all got one after the first round. Yep. All right. So round two. Carp, you're up first.
All right. We're going to go with crosswind. Picture we'll say a rectangular property, 40 acres, probably maybe 80 acres. I mean, not unheard of in pheasant country. Who cares how big it is? But it's that nice grass, pollinator, prairie habitat we always talk about and that makes your heart thump a little faster when you go in. And let's say it runs east to west, however you want to call it, and you got a west wind. A lot of people like to say, well, I'm going to start out and I'm going to just walk in the wind, and then I'm going to turn around and come back. And I prefer to go, instead of heading straight west, north, south, go a little ahead, north, south to north, go ahead, north, to, and use the crosswind all the way, because your dog can smell that. There's a reason your dog has slits on the side of his nose, is they can work across the wind. It's hard to get, especially with a pointing dog, with any dog, it's hard to get them to go with the wind when you're coming back, and then you're relatively unproductive. I mean, I've shot a lot of pheasants, as I'm sure we all have, when you're walking with the wind and the dog whoops around and goes back. But I like to hunt back and forth into the crosswind, and then you're covering so much more territory. And I've actually marked, I'm sort of getting in another tip related to ONX.
Okay.
But I'll put a,
go ahead.
I'll put a
finish your thought.
I'll put a tracker on, and I do it sharptail hunting too.
Tracker on yourself.
On myself. Yeah. And I see where I've been, and I'm like, oh, crap, I didn't hit this.
Yeah.
And you just, if you'd make a big loop around a field, you've covered 10% of it. If you go back and forth, you're covering a lot. And then, oh, you got to hunt back. I'll just sort of hunt it diagonal on the way back, or I'll wander on the way back. Because I
you'll
sort
wander
of,
or you'll take a tootle?
I'll tootle. Okay. Yeah, that's thank you for bringing that up. I'll tootle my way back, and that, and I'll follow the dog on the back and forth with the crosswind. But I like to hunt in the wind as much as the next guy. But if it's a sort of a contained piece and I know what the borders are, why just go in the wind and walk back? Cross, just go back and forth and let that wind come across the dog. It doesn't matter if he's going north to south or south to north. If the wind is west, it's always coming at him, at his nose.
All right. You're currently in the lead, Carp, with 2 points.
Might be short-lived, but it feels good.
Let's find out. Jared, you're up.
This one might be on somebody's, but off the beaten path access point, birds often get attacked from a certain, like, similar direction to where a parking lot may be, or just an access point in general. So I really like to throw them a curveball. I'll give you an example in just a second, but you can ask a private landowner, or you can just take a different angle on that particular property, especially as you're looking at ONX, you're out scouting in the morning. So here's a prime example. Last year, out in South Dakota, for Hardwater and Habitat, we found an awesome, it was actually an Aberdeen Pheasant Coalition enrollment through CREP. Big enrollment, and it had nice food edge on one of it. There were birds out in it, and they were going sort of this back corner. And if you look at the way this thing was set up, it was kind of like a triangle that came to a very, very tip, but a really long one, so like a long walking path. And the top side of that had like chopped cattails and some other stuff. I don't know what was going on there, but basically there was an access point on the other side, but it was an easy quarter of a mile, probably third of a mile, and Fondrick can attest to this, that we would have to walk before we even got to any cover. But there were no boot tracks at all on that particular side. So we decided, you know, everybody's attacking them from this one road to the south. Let's go up to the north, walk this access point. We've got the wind, same thing, was in our favor. And that's where we really started piling them up. So I like taking that off the beaten path.
That access might be one of the best tips. Yeah, that folks will hear today, because really, if there's a big parking lot that says "Hunt Pheasants" here,
yeah,
that's where people go. I mean, I would almost advise where you can actively avoiding those places. I mean, almost any other way to come in is better than those parking locations.
The other thing is, you get in a parking lot and you look at it and go, "Wow, that crop edge over there would be good." And there's a nice trail leading over there.
Yep.
And to that same point. That's a great tip.
And even if there's like private land ownership next to that, in this case, it was a really nice, it was a bean field with stubble in it, and the birds were out there. There was a whole pile of them out there in the morning that just walked into the cover. That'd be another example where you could go out, find if that's the landowner right there, and it looked like it was. We could have gone up and asked, hey, do you mind if we just scurry across this open bean field? It was just a plowed bean field. It was with some stubble there. It's quiet. You can get right to the cover, and sometimes it's getting as close as you can before the pheasants know what's up. You know?
I think they learn. I mean, we all know they're smart.
Yeah.
Maybe it's just survival instinct.
That parking lot, but they hear the door shut. It's there's hunters here again.
Even if you're stealthy and they've got to look out and they see, if pheasants could talk, they're going, oh, here come some more morons. Let's go out the back end. Yep. If you come out if you come in the other side, you're throwing them a little curveball.
Yep. I've always liked that one.
Yep.
So does that knock anybody's tip off their
list?
No way.
No.
Maybe.
I'm sitting pretty.
Maybe for me. So I'll bring it up in a little bit, and we can have a judge's ruling.
All good.
All right. My second tip in round two, find the new habitat. And what I mean by that is kind of two-pronged. If you can find new public access, new projects, that is a striking gold sort of thing, because not everybody knows about it. It's not on the paper maps. You got to have Onyx or have done the scouting to find it. The other piece of find the new habitat, generally the stuff that looks the weediest, that's more diverse, is the most productive. So if you're looking from the parking lot or the road and it just looks like a great big field, brome or singularly blue stem, it may not be, it likely is not as productive as something that looks like just a huge mess of sunflowers mixed in with blue stem and some coneflower and cattails. So the newer habitat you can find, mm-hmm. new restoration, new access, generally those are phenomenal.
Yep. So that's early successional is another way to say that. Yeah, I like that a lot.
All right. Sparks, round us out on round two.
Okay. This one is pretty specific. It's almost an opening day tip that I just kind of stumbled into a couple years ago. So I used to hate opening day because you try to get there early and there's probably someone else in your spot, or if you're like me and you're hunting by yourself, you park on one end of a property and you start walking in when it's finally time, and here comes a whole group of guys, and you know you're a single just by yourself, so I'm going to defer to them. So I have started using Onyx to find places where I can, they're smaller pieces, but they really only have one entry. I can park there and kind of claim it. It's public land. Somebody else could show up, but you know, most people give you the courtesy if you're there first. And I will sleep in my truck the night before. I will get there the night before, and I will either, if the weather's nice, I'll sleep in the bed of the truck, or I'll just lean the seat back and me and the dog will go to bed. And as the sun starts to come up, here comes the orange army, and there's people scrambling and trying to find a place to go. And I've got a little stove in the back, and I'm making my coffee and watching the sun come up, and it has made opening day go from stressful, like, oh, I just hate pheasant hunting and there's too many, to like, man, that was fun. I can't wait for opening day the next year. And that's exactly what I'm going to do this year too.
It's enjoyable to be sitting there and the sun's starting to come up, and it sort of feels good when you've done that work like you did. And about, let's say if shooting time is 9 a.m., we'll say, and about 7:15, the first truck rolls by, and there's a bunch of rubbernecking, and you can see the disappointment on their face. And I also like that tip. Yeah, I think you alluded to it, is not the primo spot. I like the same thing. I think you were saying, correct me if I'm wrong, that Don't go for the primo spot. Go for a small spot, the one that is easily overlooked, and take it. You know, all you need is a rooster. Who cares?
And the thing is, so if you're going to sleep in your truck, you get there the evening before, and the sun's going down, and you can hear the roosters crowing. You know where they're going to be in the morning. I mean, I literally was like, okay, I'm going to walk down there, and that little slew, and I heard one there last night. And I mean, it was such a great morning that it just really transformed opening day for me. So that's sleep in your truck.
Make sure you pack a bag of clothes.
Yep, save yourself the cost of a hotel room for the night and just bum it in your truck.
Do you put your jammies on or just sleep in your hunting clothes?
I'm pretty rough. Yeah, I'll just sleep in my hunting clothes, throw a sleeping bag over the top of me.
It's a legitimate question. Would you put your pajamas on?
No. I'm just giving it some crap.
All right. At the end of round two, we have a four-way tie with 2 points. We have a barn burner, folks. This final commercial spot of this episode has come up multiple times. Onyx. Onyx is a proud supporter of Pheasants Forever and Quail Forever. It is the bird hunter's best friend. Click on the link on the show notes for this episode. It'll take you to Onyx, and you can use the code PFQF to get yourself 20% off your subscription to Onyx, and Onyx will donate a portion back to Pheasants Forever and Quail Forever. So if you don't have Onyx and you're listening to this podcast, my goodness, that is the number one tip with a bullet to the top of the charts. Go get yourself Onyx. Round three, Bunt Cake leads us off.
All right. I put this one in here because I don't know, it came up. I thought about it. I thought about Carp and I go out and visit some friends in South Dakota every year, and we do this. I also had the chance to hunt with one of our donor last year and just a life member in general. And it's this concept of no noise, and I'll just explain it. And that, like, obviously people are going to make a little bit of noise when you're crackling through habitat and that type of thing. But everyone has that specific hunting partner who we meld with, right? Knowing that, like, you're making a plan, you're hatching it in the truck or ahead of time, you're looking at Onyx, your chessboard is laid out there before you even get out to the field, and like your dog collars and stuff, I'm not beep them, they're like using the vibrate function to call them back to you. But it's basically like when I'm out in the field, I've got specific people that I really like hunting with, because we already know what each other's going to do in specific spots because we've talked about it. Like, you know, like instead of being like, hey, Bob, come around the edge there. Just pull it around, you know. Come on. We're going to turn the corner here. Everything is laid out. Like, you get out of the truck, you open your door quietly, you take it and just shut it, and then, you know, not slam it, but just shut it nice and quiet. You've already either got your stuff on or you put your stuff on quick, you slip down into the cover and you go. It's not like we get out and then we have a conversation about like what's going to transpire on the cover out in front of us. I've seen multiple times where you pull up, somebody's talking or making a joke or, you know, slamming their tailgate down and, Sparky, get over here. birds are taking off. So the whole no noise concept and just knowing the people that you're hunting with and yeah, can live living that.
Can I add a carp corollary that
yeah, carp corollary.
That's a great tip. And in fact, one way to take it to another level is I'll stop in town somewhere or a mile down the road and do all that monkey business.
Mm, yep.
And then you pull, and I mean, dog's ready. Her Tinkle Bell is on.
Yep.
And I'm dressed. I've got the boots on, everything.
Her Tinkle Bell?
Yeah, her Tinkle Bell.
And then in a lot of instances, you and I have hunted together where we might park a block away.
Yeah.
Open the door, let the dog out, grab your gun, and
but
go.
But I'd even couple that with we'll stop in town and maybe it's 3 miles, 5 miles, who cares? You got a nice parking lot, you don't have to stand in snow or whatever to get ready. And you do that after you've driven there, you know, and you get your clothes, you get everything ready, and then you pull in, and it's like you said, you open the door, you click it shut, you let the dog out, and you go.
So let's underline, bold, and italics this one, because I feel like it's the number one mistake particularly new hunters make is roll up to a parking spot and slamming the door, yelling at the dog, talking, like noise. I mean, this is survival for these birds, and noise They can hear the vibrations. You know, it's absolutely a deal killer for a lot of people.
Yep. So
good tip.
Yep. All right. Bundt Cake in the lead with 3.
Come on.
But I'm going to tie you up. So to speak. Carp, this is one that could be on your list. So we'll see if I sink a battleship here. Play hooky from work on a Tuesday, especially if snow is in the forecast.
I knew this would be on your list, so I don't have it there.
We know each other too well.
Bob knows all my tricks. Yeah. And he's very understanding, too.
I know I'm going to get an ADP alert the night before, well, maybe even the morning of. Like, I don't think I'm going to make it to the office today.
I seem to have come down with pheasant fever.
But... So, you know, if you have the opportunity to take a day, or even if you're going to take a long trip, if you can do that in the middle of the week, and you get so much better opportunity to hunt the places you want without any other pressure, very little pressure. It also, there's a couple of days where the birds can sort of settle back into patterns. By hunting on a Wednesday.
I was going to ask, if you could pick like one day of the week, weather, not considering weather, like what day? What's your strategy? Like you thinking like, oh, by Thursday, the birds are the most rested, and those guys that take Friday aren't out there yet?
Or? Not Friday's a weekend day anymore.
Friday's a weekend. What's your pick, Carp?
Tuesday or Wednesday. I'd take Wednesday.
Okay. I was going to say Wednesday as well because you get 2 days, the Monday, Tuesday, for the birds to sort of settle back in.
That's good.
Because Thursdays, people are starting their long weekends a lot of times. This is for me too. I get up super early on Thursday. By Thursday afternoon, I've reached my destination and I start the hunt.
A little swing, yep.
And like Carp mentioned, Fridays, you know, whether it's MEA weekend or, you know, there's a holiday built in, Fridays tend to have the second most hunters is next to a Saturday. A lot of times Sunday afternoon
can
be pretty good. A lot of people
just hunt
home.
Sunday morning, maybe into the afternoon, and then I'm going to go home and give me time to put things away.
Football game, family stuff. You've been away.
Vikes just whooping up on people.
we'll see how long that lasts.
Oh,
wow. So we have a Vikings fan. We have a Packers fan. We have a Lions fan. I have no idea what you are, Sparks.
I'm a Nebraska Cornhusker. Go Big Red.
This is a breaking news alert. It doesn't count in the NFL. What NFL?
If you're from Nebraska, the NFL does not count.
I know, but all right. Sparks is up. Red. Number 3.
GBR.
Round 3. Can you tie the lead? What's your third one?
I think so. I mean, it kind of dovetails into some of the other things that people have brought up, but just – explore, I think. That's part of the reason why when you're a kid, you like love hunting because you can explore these new places and you feel like you're going on these little adventures. And as you get older, it's easier to go back to the same places and hunt the good old spots that always produce. But try to make a point every time you go out, if it's a weekend trip, try to hit at least one other new spot. And if you're feeling really adventurous, and so I'm from Nebraska. Pick a different area of Nebraska that you've never hunted before. Pick a few places out on Onyx. Go look at it on the ground and just go and have a little exploratory trip. It just keeps things fresh and new and exciting. So explore.
That might get a pin out of it too.
Yeah. You build yourself up. You build up your list, your milk run of spots.
Yeah.
And one goes away and you're continuing to build.
And it builds up your ability to just look at a piece of ground and say, I bet there's pheasants in there. Or it doesn't look so good. I'm gonna keep driving.
Dangerously close to new habitat, new spots. I mean, explore. Ed Hockley, what do you think? Do we have a judge?
I'm talking location-wise. He's talking habitat-wise. I said follow the dog, and you gave yourself a point.
Up high, down low, 3 points. All right. Carp, round us out for round 3.
Well, I was taking a little chance here, but my twist on it, I thought meant it wasn't a chance. We all know the golden hour is great, right? If I came out and said, hunt the golden hour, it's like, yeah, big deal. But I like the golden 2 hours, especially the later the season goes. And there's a couple reasons. And one is, if you wait till the golden hour, the birds are frequently already out in the field if crops are done. And you're walking along and the birds, and it's happened to me umpteen times, the birds are out in the field and they see you in the cover and they go the other direction. I think birds start moving earlier than we think from their hell holes, their day places, out towards feed. And I think often they're walking. I mean, they'll fly, but usually it's walking. And then you're out there earlier when they're moving, and you're not putting all your eggs in 1 hour basket at the end of the day. And that last hour can go awfully fast. And then you start getting, you know, we all want to get a bird. It's just part of hunting. And then you're like, where are the birds? I can't find any. What's going on? If you have 2 hours, you can take a little more relaxed approach. You can get those birds when they're moving from cover toward feed. And the other reason is you claim your spot. Mm-hmm. And it's not unlike opening morning, in that we're public land hunters and there's competition. Mm-hmm. And especially for guys, at least like me, I'm either out there on a trip or I'm out for the day and for a day trip. And there's local people around who can come out and hunt that golden hour. And that's the ideal, you know. Like, I can do a swing. If you live out there, you can do a swing every day, get off work, do a little wangling, get off work early.
do a little what?
It's wangling season. You wangle that extra hour. I got to work this early this morning, boss.
Yeah, everybody wang chung tonight.
Get out your ham bone and wangle.
And You get out there and you claim your spot. And I'll often, if I'm hunting in the afternoon and like earlier, and I get back to the vehicle and it's a big spot, I'll be just like, crap, I'm not driving anywhere. I'm staying here and I'm going to go back out and hunt. And they'll be moving more. You also get that spot. One of my favorite little story related to this is a couple seasons ago, I had my son and his friend along. And we sort of got finished a spot, and I said, I know a spot, let's go there. And it was sort of went against my grain. I should have probably stayed, but we're heading toward the spot, and it was literally going to be the golden hour. And I came up over a rise, and here's a truck on the gravel road ahead of us. I'm like, oh crap. And then he turned to go to what would be a traditional parking area, and I followed, and that truck sort of slowed down, and his taillights came on and they came off, and he kept going. And I have to admit, I gunned it.
And you know, you've told this story on the podcast.
Okay. It's just so great.
I gunned it.
He's proud of it.
And I pulled in, and then they pulled past, and it's like the opening morning hunters, and I could see them looking at there. I could see their heads going, why didn't we just pull in there? And we shot three roosters. But you're claiming a spot earlier. If you're out there 2 hours before, you're probably going to beat the golden hour crew and have that spot. And the last thing I'll say about golden 2 hours is, you know, we've all shot a lot of pheasants the last 20 yards of the truck. Oh, here's a pheasant here. But I'll also end a mile into the cover at shooting hours, and I load my gun and walk back in the dusk, in the dark. You don't have to, if you're out there where you think they're pheasants, just hunt.
Yep.
What's the difference?
Yep. And then set your alarm.
Set your alarm. Oh, it's 4:38, unload. You're perfectly legal to walk back.
Yep. Mm-hmm. That's a good tip.
I like that.
All right. We have a four-way tie with 3 points. So going into the final round, and I get to go first.
That's why he set it up that way. That's why he set it up that way.
Now, I'll admit that this one comes, this is the one I referred to as maybe it's similar to Jared's round two off the beaten path comment. My round four suggestion is do the opposite. So what I'm thinking about, you hear this in fantasy football in particular, like, you know, if you get the fifth round pick, like, don't get the fifth quarterback. Pick the best running back or pick the best wide receiver, right? Do the opposite of what the conventional wisdom is. So part of that can be don't park in the parking spot that everybody expects and then walk the exact same path that looks like a deer trail. Do the opposite could mean hunting right on the border of a state without crossing in. So I think about so many people, this is giving away a really good one. You know, if you travel into another state, people feel compelled to get into the other state, like 40 miles, 100 miles. And when they're just crossing the border, like in places, no man's land. Virtually nobody lives there. There's nobody local. And all the non-residents just like, I got to get to Chamberlain. It's like, you just passed.
There's
like,
always more birds the further you drive. Right. The further you drive, the more.
So you can, and you can picture state borders. I like to have two licenses at the same time. Mm-hmm. Then you jump back and forth.
So the suggestion is, no matter what the conventional wisdom is, you know, Friday, Saturday, hunt Wednesday. Do the opposite of what the general public is going to do, because generally you're going to have less pressure, find some birds that are less pressurized, and maybe hunt some fresh places.
That's a good one.
I vote give it to him.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right.
We're all winners here. We're all winners.
Everybody who wins in Pheasants Forever Little League. And that takes me into first place with 4 points. Sparks, can you tie me?
I can. So my last tip is kind of an end of the hunt thing, very end of the hunt. So you already have a rooster or two in your bird bag. Save the legs. A lot of people just breast out their birds. A lot of states, that's legal. Upland hunting is a calorically negative activity. We want to bring home as much meat as we can. Just last night, I made a pheasant soup. I took the legs from two roosters, so four legs, threw it in a slow cooker, just in water and a slow cooker, and let them get tender, took it out, took the meat off the bone. There was enough meat off four pheasant legs to fill a cereal bowl with shredded pheasant meat. Now, at the end of that, if you want to throw an onion or some carrots or whatever in that and take the lid off of the crock pot and leave it on high, then you have pheasant stock that you can freeze and use. And that pheasant meat, like, you can throw some barbecue sauce in there, have a pheasant barbecue sandwich. You can throw some taco seasoning in there and have it with tacos. You can put it in pasta. We'll just vacuum seal it, and it's already cooked, and it's so easy to pull that out of the freezer for a weeknight meal. Save the legs.
Macaroni salad, a little mayo, some chasins, and cashews.
Like a chicken salad sandwich. Yep, exact same with pheasants.
I mean, barbecue sauce, chicken, sloppy joes, or sandwich. Yep.
So I am going to throw the challenge flag, though.
That's a tip. Hold on. Let me plead my case.
Well, let me right. state right. my case right. first. Ethically, totally agree. Wholeheartedly drives me crazy to see people breast birds out and throw the legs away, because it's tremendous meat. It just takes a little extra care.
People just don't have to cook it.
the rules for this game was pheasant hunting battleship.
Hold on.
Okay.
Okay.
Now make your case.
So our tips to give to people listening are so they can go out and come home with more pheasants. If you're leaving half the bird in the field, with my tip, you are guaranteed to come home with twice the amount of pheasant than you normally would.
Wow.
And I like guaranteed. I love the crock pot, too. So I like your idea of just doing it with water. I use chicken stock,
which even is probably better. Same, just whatever. Just kill the lily a little bit.
But, that stuff just melts off. And you can take the rest of the bones and the tendon and stuff and just toss it.
Or if you get a shot-up bird, like the breast and stuff, you can, pick the feathers and the junk and the little bits of bone out of there and throw it in there, and it's a soup.
When you started talking about all the different ways you can do it, it brought me back to Forrest Gump, like, pheasant on a burger, pheasant,
Welcome to my house, man. That's what we're eating all the time. Pheasants, quail.
So it sounds like you're voting in favor of this point for Mr. Sparks.
I think he makes a pretty good point there.
Yeah, I'd give it to him.
That could also be the difference too. Like, if you went out, you had a great day. Let's say you shot two birds. Let's say it was a three bird limit. You shot two birds. Like, you're making more out of those two birds than somebody's making out of three, because you're utilizing the whole thing.
You guys are like Little League coaches. I totally believe philosophically, but that is not a tip for hunting. Yeah. But the quail guy is holding his own with the pheasant guys.
I'm outvoted, I guess.
Well, we all want a green belt premium.
we're being friendly and generous for you. Yeah. But everybody gets a trophy.
I'm disappointed in you, Carl.
Are you? I don't know. I don't feel so. I'm just coming off 3 days of sharptail hunting, so I'm just sort of like, yeah, that's fine, Ryan.
There's that long-haired hippie.
So, yeah, but with the hookah pipe.
I want to add a corollary, though. Ryan makes a great point about birds that might be beat up. When I freeze them, I'll mark them. I'll put an asterisk on, and the asterisk means this is pristine. It's filetable. It's soup bird, roast bird, perfect birds. And I'll write chunks on it if it's a chunk bird, you know, stuff like that.
Chunk bird.
Ham bone bird.
Yeah. Hey, don't be writing new tips now.
No, don't be cheating. I'm not.
All right, Carp, get your fourth point for a three-way tie.
All right, after our kindness and generosity, which all listeners should recognize and appreciate for Ryan, I'm going to go back to hardcore hunting. And
do you want people to feel sorry for you?
He'll take a point anyway he can get it.
Going back to hardcore hunting.
And I'd expect the same if I ever get on a quail forecast or a quail battleship. My last tip, and this is the penultimate one. No, this is the last one.
This is in.
So I'll get a point here, is the ISO play. And what's the ISO play?
Sounds like hunting solo, but do tell.
The ISO play is, we all know there's places where the birds conglomerate, especially late in the season, but also before. And I specifically have one place in mind. If you don't know what a dugout is, a dugout on the prairie is a pond that's been dug out for the cows. It's a low spot, a dam at the other end. It can accumulate water on a wet year, and it becomes a watering place for the cows. And there's a lot of dugouts across the pheasant range, especially the farther west you go. But even in Minnesota and Iowa, this particular spot, there's a dugout in the middle of about 900 acres. And this 900 acres is beautiful prairie, as pristine as you can ever imagine. But this dugout has willows around it. It's got a berm on top. And it's surrounded by grass, and it's impossible to get a pheasant there. So I don't even try. We come over the hill. We walk up to it. Pheasants go all over, hell and back. And then we sit down, and we wait about 10 minutes, and we figure three went this way, and we hunt them. Because then you got a chance when they're isolated.
You are a turkey hunter at heart, aren't you?
Oh, yeah.
Scatter them and hunt them.
Busting up the fall flock.
Exactly.
You call them in too? Do you have a little pheasant call?
I'd like to try, but it's called isolate them. I mean, they're easy. It's like any, when they're in that group and they're in, and think about like late winter cattails. Maybe you can get up on them, but maybe they'll see you coming and they go, and maybe one or two go somewhere where like, I could actually get at them. They're not in the middle of a 28 acre cattail hellhole. But I like to do it. And you sort of got to learn these spots. It's not necessarily a new spot technique, because you're going to find, but you can find them and then do it. But I like to do it with spots where they're always there. And I just like, I'm not even going to hunt them there. We just scatter them to the winds and go after them.
I've got a spot in southwest Minnesota that my former college roommate has. Actually, his uncle owns it, but he lets us hunt it. And it's an old gravel pit. But you can call it a dugout, because that's basically what it is. Same thing. He's got really nice wide buffer strips leading up to it. So a lot of times we'll attack it from the backside and flush. Like, as we're walking up to it, mm-hmm. birds start piling out, and same thing. They'll go land out in that nice buffer strip, and then it's...
Do you call it the ISO play?
I probably will now. Yeah, the old ISO play on the old dugout.
So
I like that.
You're voting in favor of this one as well.
Yeah, I think that's a good tip.
Bust them up.
The old turkey.
Why wouldn't this be a good tip?
I think it works.
Carp and okay. I have hunted several dugouts together in South Dakota, too, and dugouts hold birds.
The ISO play for good reasons. Point number four in round four, a three-way tie. Bundt cake.
Mm-hmm.
Will you bring us to a four-way tie to close out Pheasant Hunting Battleship?
I've got one that I think a lot of hunters know this, but it's one of my pet peeves that I always come back to, and that's work the edge. In some ways, pheasants are a lot like deer. They're a creature of edge. That's where they live out their lives, on the edge. And although, like, you know, large grasslands and things like that can yield roosters, every time I find myself maybe struggling and I'm looking to get something in a bag, I always come back to the edge. And I've got a couple different ways I do it. So early in the season, especially if you're waiting in a parking lot or you're just waiting around in general in the morning for shooting time to start. A lot of people just sit in their trucks. I like to sit outside of my truck, and it's for good reason, is because a lot of times those birds are really vocal in the morning. And I think this year it could serve people pretty well, because especially if we have standing corn up, those pheasants might be out in that corn, and you could go out there and be like, well, if I was sitting in my truck, like, oh, this is just, why am I hunting this? It looks like good habitat, but there's nothing here. Well, if you would have been outside of your truck listening to all the cackles going on, those birds are bailing out into that. And that's the spot where I drop a pin and mark it and say that last hour of the day, I'm going to come back and I'm going to park my truck. I'm going to get out with the dog, and we are going to sit right on the edge of where the corn meets that beautiful prairie. And with 35 minutes left, or maybe I'll even go to the end before it even gets to that point and work back towards the truck, because all those birds are running straight out of that cover into that. And the same thing would apply to if you can find crops standing late season for one reason or another. A few years ago, we had horrible flooding in the fall, especially in South Dakota, and we found fields that had standing corn later on in the year. Same thing. You find a cattail edge thermal covers that late into the season next to a really good food source, you don't have to go anywhere else because you know they're going to be there. So like a nice nice crep enrollment. So I really like working the edge, and I've seen it even early season deer hunting here just in my stand a couple days. Man, it's fun just to watch the pheasants and the way they work and the way they utilize edge cover. I mean, that's where they're at. So
you kind of have three or four different tips wrapped up into that. Like the edge one is sort of your lead and somewhat obvious,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Some of maybe more subtle, but I think brilliant, is, you know, listening to the cackling, to know where the birds are, not only for the moment you're going to hunt, but for the return trip the next morning.
Yep.
Because they're telling you where they slept.
Put them to bed.
Yeah.
Yep.
So here we go. Another turkey tip, right? Put them to bed.
Roosted.
Yep.
All right. So we have, at least by my scorecard, listeners, you can weigh in and let us know who you think really won.
Me.
rsparks at quailforever.org. T. Carpenter at pheasantsforever.org, or J. Wickland at pheasantsforever.org.
No C.
Wickland. Let us know who you think won the inaugural edition of Pheasant Hunting Battleship. That was fun.
Yeah, that was great.
Final thought. We'll start with Sparks, go to Jared, and then Carp closes us out. You can go on a pheasant hunt anywhere. And this is, thought on this is, you know, it ties into the pheasant hunting forecast. But if you, having the world as your oyster, anywhere you want to go, for whatever reason.
Pheasant hunting. Yeah.
Sparks, where are you going to go pheasant hunting if the world's your oyster?
Me and Carp have talked about this a little in the past. I think it would be very cool to go to the Willamette Valley in Oregon, where pheasants were not initially introduced, but the first successful introduction of pheasants, and hunt pheasants like kind of where they got their green card. That would be fun. And for people that don't know, the Willamette Valley, like after Napa Valley, is probably like the most famous wine region in the country. Mm-hmm. Great food. It would just be such a different environment than anywhere else I've ever hunted pheasants. So keep an eye out for a future Pheasant Forever Journal Maybe. About pheasant hunting in the Willamette Valley.
We'll take it.
We're drinking a little wine on the side.
After the hunt's over, little roast pheasant and wine, and yeah.
All right.
If the Willamette, Willamette Tourism Valley Board is listening, I'd be happy to
Oregon, Owen Denny's, U.S. Ambassador to China, first got the population established. Bundt Cake, where are you heading?
No, if I'm gonna base it just on the forecast alone and what I know of this year and anecdotal reports, it's pretty hard to pass up South Dakota. I think this season, from what I'm hearing and reports from our biologists and landowners and all that, you know, the last time they had a really, probably the best season they've had in long, it was 2007, 2008, before the Farm Bill flipped over. We were at the height of CRP. I think they shot 2 million roosters in that state this year. Now, I don't know if we're going to get up to that mark, but I gotta think that South Dakota is going to be in the 1.something million rooster harvest this year. I was there in January. They had an easy winter. Spring was ideal by all accounts. There's a lot of birds on the landscape, and if you're looking for like a bucket list hunt, whether you're hunting private or public or whatever it might be, I just think this is a year to, and you can't always say that, but this year, especially from what I'm hearing, South Dakota is a spot that you're going to want to visit for, your 5-day license.
There you go. South Dakota, yeah. Pheasant capital, hunt the greatest, yep. Greatest. Hashtag Bundt Cake.
Yeah, it's going to be pretty good.
All right. Final thoughts. Tom, the national treasure, Carp Carpenter, where are you heading?
Well, I've hunted pheasants in a lot of places. I won't rattle off the states. Maybe some of the oddest is maybe Utah, which has some great pheasant hunting. And I've been to most of the places, but, you know, if you, for instance, said, we'll give you one last hunt or whatever, I'd probably take Western Minnesota. I love Minnesota pheasant hunting. I think the pheasants they're hunted here, and they're warriors, and they're hard to get, but they're there. And there's few things that make me happier than a Minnesota rooster, so my adopted home state.
Yeah, I was thinking, coming from Wisconsin, blue plate.
Yeah, I've lived in Minnesota.
You got a Minnesota hat on today too.
Yeah, Minnesota Trout Unlimited. So I'd take Minnesota. I think, and I also think a lot of people bypass Minnesota getting to places farther west, and they don't know what they're missing, which is fine.
Keep heading. Points further southwest. Yeah.
You might shoot more birds in some of those places, but I think there's nothing like a rugged Minnesota rooster.
Fellas, thank you very much. That was a lot of fun.
Where are you going?
Oh, you want to? My first inclination is Montana to hunt the shadow of the Rocky Mountains. That's cool. I've had the opportunity to do that a few times and experience the rooster flushing with snow-covered mountains. And, you know, you add a sharptail or a hun mixed in there. You maybe won't shoot as many birds in Montana as you would in, well, pick six other states. You know, Minnesota, South Dakota, North Dakota, Iowa, Kansas, Nebraska. But, boy, from an aesthetically pleasing, it's hard to beat. And, you know, following the dog and by yourself on a solo hunt, that's pretty magical. Speaking of, I'm Bob St. Pierre thanking Jared Wickland, Ryan Sparks, Tom Carpenter for this game of Pheasant Hunting Battleship. And I will remind you, it is almost pheasant hunting season, so you know what that means. Always follow the dog. That was my tip number one. Sparks tried to steal it from me. Something good will rise, folks. Thanks for listening.